wolves, and birds of prey. He continues to travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Be ready to be amazed. Here's your host, Joey B.
Hello and welcome to Joey B's Outdoor Adventure. Man, do I have the coolest job. I travel all across America to bring you the very best that nature has to offer. Today I've got a special show on the road. I am at WeatherWorks, and I am sitting in a conference room with three meteorologists, and they're also social media guys, so this is going to be a really cool show. So the media director, Mike Mihalik. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, it's great to be here, Joey.
That's a good thing. Second meteorologist is Andrew Barney. Andrew, welcome to the show.
Hey, Joey, thanks for having me, man.
And third but not least, because he's got a cool name, this is Joe Martucci. Joe, welcome.
Hey, Joey, great being here.
You know, guys, everyone always wants to know about extreme weather, so I thought today a great topic would be is hurricane. We know hurricane season's coming up real soon. So can you tell me a little bit about, like, what is a hurricane?
Who wants to go on that one? Come on, guys. We're all meteorologists, right?
Sure. I'll go. I'll take it here. I'll take the first question.
Good job, good.
So a hurricane is really, it's an area of low pressure. So we need nothing unusual. There's high pressures and low pressures throughout the world. But it's an area of low pressure. And it's a special area of low pressure because it's something called a warm core storm. What that means, it has tropical characteristics. And it does develop in the tropics, usually below about 30 degrees latitude or even below the Tropic of Cancer, which is about 23.5 degrees latitude. And they're really powerful, destructive, and beautiful to look at systems from a satellite. And they'll come through anytime between June to November. That's hurricane season in the Atlantic. It's May to October over in the Pacific. And something that we monitor here in the United States very closely because it's something that can provide a lot of destruction, a lot of rainfall as well.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add to what Joe was saying. I mean, basically, you know, he says it's a warm core system. It forms off of the warm waters of the ocean. That's what it kind of feeds into this system. It's kind of a giant heat pump is what it really is. All that, you know, thunderstorm development feeds off that warm water.
You know, educators always talk about it and saying, like, what's the fuel for a hurricane? As you just said, the warm water is the fuel. So,
right.
You know, what's going to create it and then what's going to, so to speak, take it apart.
Anything above 80 degrees, that's what you want. So if you have a water temperature above 80, that's where you can start getting some fuel for hurricanes to develop.
All right. And this show is brought to you by Ramsey Outdoor Stores. Whether you shop online or in one of their stores, your experience will successfully gear you up for your next adventure. Go to RamseyOutdoor.com. So all the storms that hit the East Coast, where do they originate from?
Well, I would say they can really originate from a lot of different places. I mean, a lot of them will originate off the coast of Africa and take a real long track and make that landfall on the East Coast. Some can even originate down the Caribbean, track across some of the islands there of Cuba or the Dominican Republic, and also make that left turn into the East Coast. I don't know if you had something, Joe?
Yeah, and during the month of June or July, you can even see a hurricane developed from a stalled out cold front. So a cold front passes through the United States, kind of hangs out along the southeast coast as it does. If you have that warm water above 80 degrees, could provide some fuel to turn that cold front into a low pressure system and then a hurricane.
Yeah, and that's more common early in the year.
Right, June and July. Right, exactly. June.
Now, we always talk about the names of the storms. So when a storm is beginning, what do we call, like, let's talk about the progression of names as they go.
Sure, yeah. So originally they'll just start as a wave, usually a cluster of thunderstorms. And then when they start to get more organized, it'll turn into what we call a tropical depression, usually winds of around 30, 35 miles an hour or so. When you get a little more organized, you get stronger, you go into a tropical storm, and that's when it'll be granted a name by the National Hurricane Center. You get a name A through Z. Yeah. They're recycled every 7 years.
And those are winds over 39 miles an hour.
Right. Yeah, and that's up to between 39 and 74. Mm-hmm. And then beyond that, you start going into the categories of hurricanes. Mm-hmm. Category 1 hurricane starts at 75 miles an hour and upward.
Goes upward there, yeah. And Category 5 is the strongest hurricane. And I believe that's 155. Is that right? I'm pretty sure.
Well, you know what? We'll go with the 155, but that works because, you know what it is? It gives people an idea. And you know what's amazing? And you guys, because you're into the social media side too, a lot of the, I guess, the metro weather, even when it's a tropical depression now, they're trying to throw a name into it. And they're trying to give it something that it's not. Because, Andrew, as you said, that it really is when it becomes a tropical storm is when it's getting a name, correct?
Sure. Yeah, that's when it gets its name. And when they're tropical depressions, they'll get a number. So they'll start out with number one early in the year, and they'll go as high as it needs to. So you'll often hear, we're watching Tropical Depression 4 in the Caribbean. It could turn into a tropical storm tomorrow. But that's when they'll really start to get their names, when it's a tropical storm.
Now, we know that, and you know, it's neat when you ask the general public about high and low pressure, and you ask them questions about, like, you're looking at a weather map and you're just seeing big H's and L's, and you say to them, okay, tell me something about it. And they're just like, well, it's a big H and that's a big L. So we know the storm's going to revolve around low pressure system. So why don't one of you describe, like, a low pressure system to me, and then we'll talk high pressure, and then we'll put a storm together.
Sure. So a low pressure system is a system that spins counterclockwise. So if you think about the clock, it's going from 12, going to 6, then it's going to 3, et cetera, and then it makes its way back to 12. Low pressure system is also an area of rising motion. So if you kind of think of like a funnel almost, if you take a funnel, flip it upside down, and you're kind of moving that way up the funnel. So when you have a low pressure system, it's a system that's pulling in air from the surface and then rising it up top. That's why if you notice like a cumulonimbus, like a thunderstorm cloud during the year, you kind of see that they're really, really high up in the sky, 30, 40, even 50,000 feet, because of that rising motion that's creating those thick clouds. And that's what you have in a hurricane, really. It's just that on a larger scale.
Yeah, and we're going to go to high pressure in a second, but let's attach the barometric pressure, because no joke, you guys understand it, but if you were sitting in a room at a barbecue or something, you said to people, tell me about the barometric pressure, and they're going to go, the barometer. And then you'd say, okay, so what is it? It's a number. So we can start to attach numbers to this. Tell me about the barometer or the barometric pressure.
Well, I mean, basically, we're just measuring. We're using that as a tool to measure, how high or low the pressure is. And we like to use millibars is what we like to use as meteorologists. And for an example, I think the strongest hurricane in the Atlantic Basin had a pressure of 882 millibars, and that was Hurricane Wilma. But then on up to a high pressure, that can go up to 1,000 or 1040 or 1050 millibars. So that you really get that difference. And what happens, that's important because between a high and low pressure, winds flow from high to low pressure. Okay. So that's why it's important to know how strong that high is compared to a low. And then we can discover what the winds are like.
Yeah. And generally anything below 1,000 millibars, that's a lower area of pressure. And anything above 1,000 millibars, that's a higher area of pressure. So when we're talking hurricanes, we're talking millibars definitely in the 900s and even into 800s sometimes, like what Mike was saying before.
Now, you guys also know this. As scientists, we use one language, and then you turn a television on and they're not talking millibars. Mm-hmm. So, and their measurement, and you're looking at, a general rule for low pressure would be 29 point something when you're looking on a television, and high pressure is 30 point something. That's what the person who's not the scientist is. Actually, even the scientist, when we all turn the television on in the morning. Because I'm sure you guys are up like me at 4:30 in the morning watching your weather.
We're up at 4:30, 3:30, 2:30 in the morning, whatever time. Whenever there's weather, which is all the time, that's where we're up. But, to your point, what you could see sometimes is inches of mercury, or sometimes you'll see the INHG. HG is the chemical symbol for mercury. The kind of conversion from that is 30 inches. Anything below that, anything below 30 inches of mercury, that's your low pressure, and anything above that is your high pressure. So for hurricanes, you're looking for stuff in the 29-inch range, and if they're very small, you can get into the 20-inch, or excuse me, very large hurricanes, you get into the 20-inch range. So it's a smaller number for a bigger hurricane.
Yeah, that makes sense. And can one even then address high pressure and what high pressure is, and then we can sort of put it together as the hurricane will form?
Yeah, I mean, what high pressure is, I mean, the big blue H's you see on the maps, I mean, those are surface areas of high pressure. And basically what's happening within a high pressure is that the air is actually sinking within that. So sinking air is more of a drying air. Clouds aren't forming in that situation because you need the rising air to form clouds. So that's why under a high pressure, you're usually having, you know, sunny skies, you know, maybe just a couple of fair weather clouds, but nothing crazy. So that's pretty much what a high pressure is. Fair weather and
the winds spin clockwise in a high pressure.
Yes, well. Clockwise, opposite of a low pressure, that's for sure.
Now, Mike, this is one thing, and any of you can answer this question. When a hurricane is forming and those winds are getting stronger, mm-hmm. Talk about how those winds get stronger based on high and low.
I think it's a little bit more of the atmosphere or the environment surrounding the low pressure system, Joey. So, you know, if you have, going back to what we were saying earlier, if you have, you know, water temperatures 90 degrees, which can happen in the Gulf of Mexico. So when you get that bath water really settling in, especially during August and September, because that's when the warmest water temperatures are, it can really provide a lot of moisture and unstable air. That's what you need. You need the unstable air. That will create for a stronger hurricane. So if you think about, you know, especially if you're over in the eastern part of the United States during the summer, right? You know, it's hot, it's humid, you get a couple thunderstorms during the afternoon. That's kind of unsettled air. You kind of feel it in the air, in your bones a little bit. And that's really the same thing. You're just taking it from land and you're putting it into water and going from there. Now, how high pressures can influence a hurricane is really how to steer it. So during the summer, there's something called the Bermuda high pressure. So if you're in Bermuda most of the year, it's pretty beautiful during the months of June, July, August, September, etc. But that high pressure, because it spins clockwise, really helps to steer a hurricane. So if it starts off from the coast of Africa, you have this big area of high pressure over much of the Atlantic Ocean. So it's moving from the winds from the high pressure, moving from Africa over to the Caribbean, and then they kind of cut north. And the real question is, usually where that storm is going to set up once it gets out or into the Caribbean. Usually from the trek from Africa to the Caribbean is pretty straightforward. It's just east to west. But what happens? Where is that high pressure? If it's a little further west of Bermuda, then we're talking about a hurricane or any kind of tropical system that impacts along the Gulf Coast. You know, even the eastern part of the United States, if it's a little further east, then usually if you hear on television, if you hear somewhere else it's going safely out to sea, it's usually because that high pressure system, that Bermuda high pressure system, is just a little bit further east, and that's how it's helping to steer it.
Actually, I had one educator one time in a meteorology class said that Bermuda high sometimes is like a big lineman in football pushing the storm mm-hmm. out.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, and I think back to the actual hurricane itself, like I talked earlier, it's more like a heat pump. And basically, those thunderstorms are rising and forming around the center of the hurricane, and they're rising up into the atmosphere, and then sinking air is happening on the outside of the hurricane, and then the air comes back in along the surface again. So your thunderstorms continually form around the center and rise. So the more that happens, the stronger the hurricane is getting. And if it's over the warmer water, you know, the more chance there is for that thunderstorm development to keep occurring. And the stronger they get, those winds are sucking in from the sides faster. And then due to Coriolis effect, right, we start getting
big
the rotation. But they start getting that rotation around the hurricane. And that's why you get those winds starting to spin around the center. And that's where you're getting that tight circulation. The pressure keeps lowering and lowering.
All right, so now, if we were going to draw out a hurricane, correct, you would see, and Mike, as you're describing this, you'd see a high pressure in the middle, which is the eye, and then you have the low pressure on the outside, as you described, and you have all those cumulonimbus clouds that are there. Tell me about the eye of the storm.
Well, the eye of the storm is actually the lowest pressure.
Is it really?
Yes, you're going to find in the hurricane. There's actually a high pressure well overhead. Because when you think about what we were just talking about, the thunderstorms have rising motion within, so you're actually getting a high pressure aloft over the hurricane.
Oh, see, all right.
Okay. No, that's fine. But that's actually conducive to hurricane development because it allows that almost like an exhaust vent at the top of a hurricane. It just kind of spreads out, allows those clouds to fan out, and just keeps feeding that mechanism.
So is it like two huge convection currents?
Yes.
And you're getting that circular motion.
Basically, out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, actually the eye is the lowest pressure in the hurricane itself. And it's funny the way it works, because you have the eye wall surrounding the eye, and that's all the thunderstorms, all the heavy winds, all the heavy rain and all that. But in the dead center of the hurricane, it's actually calm. So when that comes over you, it's you go from, say, 100 plus mile an hour winds to almost dead calm within the center of that hurricane. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty amazing how that works.
And then you got to realize the other half of the hurricane.
Yeah, it's like half time.
The marching band just came out.
Yeah. And it's not over. You know, don't walk out and be like, oh, well, I'm good. No, I see a blue sky. No.
Dorothy and Toto ran into a problem on that one.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. Now, so this hurricane is there. So what's going to cause a hurricane to break up?
Sure. So there's a couple things that will cause it to break up. The first thing would be colder water. When you start getting north around that Bermuda high pressure, like I was saying before, you start to get to about, I'm going to say 35 degrees latitude, which would put you around like the Virginia-North Carolina border on into like Tennessee and so on and so forth. The water really does start to get colder below 80 degrees. So because of that, it loses the heat. There's no more heat pump anymore, because what it's pumping is colder water, not hot water. So
it's not conducive to form that thunderstorm development around the center anymore. So you're getting less vigorous updraft in the middle of the hurricane because the waters are cooler.
Right. Another thing that could happen is it hits dry air. There's something called the Saharan dust layer, which the Saharan Desert in Africa, you see this dust during the summer. You can see it even on a satellite image blowing across the Atlantic and even as far west as the Gulf of Mexico. So if the hurricane or a storm gets into that, it kind of chokes the system out and then it fizzles out that way.
Yeah. And another thing that could ruin it would be something called wind shear. Generally over a hurricane, we want low levels of wind shear, which means winds are relatively calm. They're not changing with height much. That's what I'm talking about, nice high pressure over the hurricane, aloft. Once you have that wind shear developing, say from the westerly direction going east, that can start blowing off the thunderstorm tops on the top of the hurricane. So once you do that and you're removing those thunderstorms from the actual center and that eye, that's when we can start seeing the hurricane dissipate too.
And we forgot the one that most people probably think about. It hits land.
Yeah.
If it hits you, it starts to die out.
I was getting more technical. See, I was trying to get into the wind shear. It just hits land.
It just hits land and it goes away. I'll make it a little technical and I'll help to explain it. So if a hurricane hits land, then what happens is land is generally dry. Even though you have some lakes and rivers, stuff like that, it's generally dry. So it kind of also chokes out the system at that point, because there's the lack of water from an ocean. It's just pretty much hitting dry land. Or if it hits a mountain, it can kind of squeeze out the moisture before it goes over the mountains and further west. So for example, if it's a hurricane and we kind of saw this with Sandy a couple years ago in 2012, but if it goes from east, let's say it makes landfall in New Jersey, it goes across or tries to go due west across the Appalachian Mountains, well, it's going to wring out that moisture because the mountains kind of help squeeze out that moisture before it hits the mountains. And then on the other side of that, it starts to get drier because all the moisture was used on the east side of the mountains rather than the west side. That's something also, it's called a rain shadow.
Or watch this. I'm going to throw out one term because I only know one good one. I've always wanted to use the adiabatic lapse rate, which is the same thing as a rain shadow. Yes? No? Come on, guys. Wait. I always wanted to use this term. I learned it in my meteorology. Never got a chance to use it. And now you're blowing me off, guys.
I'm sorry, man.
It's okay. It was a good try. No,
it was a good try.
Hey, I went for it, man. I struck out. It's all right.
That's right. No, the lapse rate, unfortunately, is not much due to hurricanes, but that's the change of temperature with height. So that's actually good for, depending on the lapse rate, if you have a high lapse rate, it's good for thunderstorm development. which hurricanes have, but it's not thunderstorms that would create a hurricane. It's more just your summertime thunderstorms, something like that.
Just real quick, Joe, back to your mountain example. The hurricane will also lose some of its circulation, too. It gets kind of disrupted as it comes into the mountain. So that's another effect that the landmass can have on it.
So, good, Andrew.
Well, that's the beauty of these things forming over water, is that and over water there's not much friction for these winds to really circulate and get going. Mm-hmm. So when it encounters land, there's a lot more friction over land. And so that really disrupts the system as well.
And it's sad, but correct, if it's hitting things south of the northeast, it's slowing down as it's running into mountains and running into homes and things, which is slowing that energy down, the friction, as it's hitting itself north.
Yeah, sure, but the wind energy. Mm-hmm.
But, and you guys, because I'm sure this was command central for when Hurricane Sandy hit, can you guys tell me any stories either about when you were here or as you were predicting it or the aftermath of Sandy?
Yeah, I think they're going to have to deflect to me because...
Yeah, Mike was the only one here.
I think I do have a good story. I can go first.
But no, that's okay. Sandy was a pretty amazing storm. And basically, we had a bunch of meteorologists just go to a local hotel about a mile or so down the road and kind of just hole up there, you know, so we weren't driving out of town and trying to get back in. When we had that storm come in, I remember being in the hotel when the strongest winds were occurring, and all I remember is I would hear the wind just thundering through, and then I would start hearing snapping, and I knew branches and trees were coming down. It's every wind gust that came through. I mean, we were gusting to 80 or more miles an hour at times, and of course the power went out, so that was gone. Come the morning, I came in, and our power was out here, but we did have a generator running, which is, you know, good. And we had computers running up, but then the telephone lines, you know, were going down, or the cable was out, so we were having trouble getting internet. We did have a little bit of DSL connection, and we started running lines to everybody's computer, just so we had some internet connection and we can get to our clients and give them the latest on the storm. The issue was, since it hit the northeast, a lot of the observing stations were out too because they didn't have power. So you would look at a weather map and you usually have all these airports and weather stations reporting what's going on, and you'd have like two. And you're going, oh, this is not good. You know? So it was a very, very interesting time when Sandy came through.
I'm sure also a learning experience, as you just said, you know.
Absolutely.
Those other places needed to now, I'm sure, have generator backups. That would be a piece of that too. But
yep,
the damage itself, now you guys were in college at that point, or where were you guys?
I was. So I was in college. I went to Rutgers University. So,
see, Joe, besides having a good name, that's where my degrees are from too. But go ahead, Joe. Right, go.
I knew I liked you, Joe. I knew I liked you right as soon as I met you.
Penn State.
Whatever. So I was a senior in college, and you know, you knew the storm was going to happen for, you know, a couple days here. You knew it was going to make that left turn heard around the world, where it kind of went around the high pressure, but then by the time it got to Bermuda, it started making that left turn over into New Jersey. So anyway, knew it was going to happen for a few days. So about 3 days before the storm hit, I was so excited. I was like, you know, it's going to be, you know, storm's coming. It's going to get to see all your wildest weather dreams come true, which, as a side note, is always a big conundrum you have as a meteorologist. You want to see these powerful storms, but they produce a lot of damage. I was riding my bike back from class, and I got into a bicycle accident and concussed myself, broke my nose, lost 3 teeth, and I was out of service for a bunch of days. I was kind of just, I had to go back home, and there I was with a concussion, sleeping 16 hours a day, right as soon as the storm was coming. So I was like, you know, instead of any days, I'd say couldn't it have been like the week after or something like that? I couldn't even focus, so I was kind of just... You can only, you know, if you have a concussion, maybe you guys had a concussion out there, you know it's hard to read anything. Mike's raising his hand, he's got a concussion. It's hard to look at the computer, watch TV. So I was really just kind of laying there with my eyes closed, enjoying this storm from a strictly weather standpoint. But You know, it was very powerful. I mean, I remember seeing loads of green lights in the sky. Those were transformers that were blowing from a storm. Now, where I lived, I was in Union County, New Jersey, so northeast New Jersey, and it was just amazing to see, you know, the amount of rain and the wind that come down. It's really nothing like you ever saw before, or I ever saw before, with the wind just knocking out all these transformer branches coming down, et cetera, et cetera. Then you're trying to watch the TV, and, you know, you're watching, you know, I was watching some of the news stations, and, like, you see a flicker, your TV flicker for a second, then I was like, oh, this is going to happen, isn't it? The power's going to go out. You already knew other friends of yours, the power's going out, too. You knew yours was going to be a matter of time. Eventually, it went out, and I don't remember too much else because, again, I was concussed at that point. So I missed out, but
surprising.
I remember
Sandy.
It was really good.
What's Sandy?
What's Sandy? I at least remember that
one. No, but guys, and I've had a few concussions, and I always say it this way. We get to act any way we want for the rest of our lives because we could always blame it on that concussion.
That's right.
So we have an excuse there. So first thing, Andrew, have you had a concussion?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
So then all of us have concussions. So
yeah.
This is good. Well, this is good.
Yeah.
but we all can act any way we want because, hey, there's a reason for the way our actions.
That's brain right. injury.
Brain injury.
Who's had the most?
I had three. I've only
won. I've done deuce.
Okay,
well,
I win.
The winner on that one.
Yeah, the trophy for you.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you so much.
He's going to forget where it went. He's going to misplace
well,
it.
Well, yes, well, because we're all had concussions, we've lost track of where we are here. But okay. Going back to it, after the hurricane, correct, storm surge becomes a big problem at that point. Is that something where you guys are also involved in, whether it's a prediction or helping out with?
Yeah, I mean, the storm surge ahead of the storm, ahead of Sandy, was huge. I don't know if we're still talking about Sandy, but that's a good example because we had several days of those winds pushing onshore, those easterly winds pushing that water. And I believe at the time, did we have a full moon at the time too?
Yes, there was. Yeah, it was a perfect storm, really. But yeah, the full moon, it was astronomical high tide, and it naturally the tides are higher at that point.
Yeah.
So that really played.
So we had the natural astronomical high tide, and then we also had Sandy with its winds and large area. And Sandy was a very large storm.
Windfield was
pulling
huge.
Those winds in. So that caused all the flooding down the Jersey Shore.
Record flooding
for
many places.
And,
yep.
You know, it was pretty amazing to see the pictures the aftermath of that storm. And we actually sent a couple of teams of meteorologists down to the Jersey Shore and helped work on some relief efforts down there, you know, to help clean up.
One of my friends who's a fishing captain, and all the captains of their boats, and all their boats got bashed up except for his because he put his out to sea with a long anchor going down, and basically it just kept spinning his boat in a circle, and everyone else's boats were damaged, and he had no damage at all.
Wow.
Pretty cool thing.
Hey, he was smart.
Yeah, that's the one thing with hurricanes. I mean, everybody gets hooked on the winds, and the winds are going to be so strong.
Yep.
But a lot of times, it's the flooding and the storm surge and the rainfall that is the biggest impact from the hurricanes, you know, because of the massive amount of flooding.
It's almost like a big wave pool in the sense that the hurricane's churning up all this water in the open Atlantic, and then it just pushes it onto land as it makes landfall. So you get all this water that comes in, you get a storm surge, and something else too, a lot of the bays, you know, along New Jersey and New York, Long Island, you know, they had flooding for many days after the storm because it took a while for those bays to drain out. They only have inlets that are a half mile wide, and you have all this water in the bay from the storm. It takes a while for that to drain out, too.
Right.
You can even talk about storm surge further because just this year, the National Hurricane Center and the Weather Service are starting storm surge watches and warnings for the first time. And this is really something that I think was spurned by Sandy, was because, you know, what Joe just said, it's something that, you know, you don't really think about. Everybody gets tied up in the wind and the rain, but the storm surge for the people along the coast, especially along the Jersey Shore and Sandy, was the biggest part of that storm. It wasn't the rain or the wind, you know, it was the storm surge that came in feet above where, you know, the tide normally is, and that's why they're doing watches and warnings now this year ahead of hurricanes and large systems.
And you guys know this because science keeps getting better, and Andrew, as you're saying that, It's like we're going to be able to make better predictions. And really, that's what WeatherWorks is helping your clients, but it's helping the general public learn more about it. And so my question to the social media guys, if people want to know about WeatherWorks, how do they find more info?
Hey, obviously, I mean, we're all over social media. So if you want to, well, first, if you want to go to find out about WeatherWorks, you could always go to weatherworksinc.com. I mean, that's the place where you'll find everything of what we do for our clients. But if you want to find out about what we're doing as meteorologists in the background and behind the scenes, that's where you want to go to visit us on Facebook. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Snapchat. We're on YouTube.
We're on it all.
We're on it all, as Joe said. You know, and we're even looking into getting into podcasting, just like Joey B here.
And to find us, it's Facebook, Snapchat, and Twitter, all at WeatherWorks, and Instagram at WeatherWorks LLC. We had to add that LLC for Instagram.
Yeah, somebody took our name.
Yeah.
That happens because, believe it or not, there's more than one Joey B out there, but there's only one real Joey B.
That's right.
That's right.
I was saying with him.
That's the one and only. So, Mike, Andrew, Joe, I just want to thank you. When I go on the road, I go on the road to find guys or gals that want to give the scoop, and we've now got the scoop on hurricanes. So, Mike, thanks for stepping on.
And not a problem. Thank you.
Andrew?
It was a pleasure, Joey. Thanks a lot.
Joe?
Joey, it was great. We're going to have to talk about Rutgers and our names one day. We'll do our own podcast.
We can do that, but the Penn State guy over here whispered us.
We'll go to another room. We'll go away.
I can't take all the Rutgers talk. I'm sorry.
we'll go to the Rutgers room.
That's it.
We'll go
to Rutgers room.
Yes, yes. So until next time, enjoy life's adventures.
You can follow all of my adventures online at joeyb.tv. That's joeyb.tv. And a very special thank you to the men and women of our armed forces for keeping us free and for our police and firefighters for keeping us safe. May God bless America. Until next time, this is Joey B. Enjoy life's adventures.